enjoying getting to see each other again or meeting new people or meeting the people we've seen on Zoom for so many months. So welcome to our first face-to-face meeting. We did have some conversation prompts on your table, but we are all chatty by nature, and so we didn't really need those prompts tonight, but we'll keep them for another time in case there's a lull at some point in time. So a couple of announcements. If you need to use the restroom, it's out this door and to the right. And then also there's plenty of food, as you saw when you filled your plates the first time. Feel free to get up and help yourself to more during the meeting. You won't miss a thing. There's so much food out there. So please feel free to help yourself to seconds and thirds if you'd like. So this is informal. So please feel comfortable to get up and get more beverages or get more food if you need to. So so you should have an agenda with the handouts that we're going to use throughout tonight's meeting. We do have a very full agenda, as we usually do, but it's going to be exciting to do this in a face-to-face manner. So we'll start with the roll call, and instead of me calling out your names, we're just going to start around the room and say your name and what you, what group you represent here on the FAC committee. And then quickly let us talk about what would be your dream job. The dream job, if time and location and all of that was no object, you could have your dream job tomorrow, what would it be? All right. I'm going to start
with me. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm Marla Sanger, and I've had the pleasure of being part of FAC since, I think, 15, 16, maybe 17, anyway. But I started out as a Peace Health Representative, and now I'm a, my role is a user of public health services. So I'm grateful to be able to continue to be on it.
Sandy, if we're going this way, should I introduce Dr. Purdy?
Oh, sure. Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I want to introduce, your next one coming up, so I figured I'd get to it first and introduce you. So I want to introduce you all to Dr. Tara Purdy, who is our new Deputy Health Officer. We have two Deputy Health Officers, but the other Deputy Health Officer is basically assigned to the four other counties that we work with, so he will be working with your counterparts. If there is a FAC, some of the counties have them and some of them don't in the other counties. And just I'll do your background really quickly. Dr. Purdy got both her medical degree and her MPH at the University of Washington. She's qualified to be a health officer in the state by her training. She's got extensive public health experience. Oh, by the way, she's boarded both in internal medicine as well as in infectious disease. So she brings that background. And she's got experience being an EIS officer for the CDC, so worked for the CDC. Has experience in local public health, being the assistant health officer and TB controller, I think that was a term for Santa Clara County in California, which has close to 2 million people, and many times the TB caseload that we have here in Clark County. Did that for a few years. More recently has been doing clinical infectious disease at Swedish in Seattle, but has wanted to get back into local public health and is took the job here. So I'm sorry for the long-winded introduction.
Thanks very much.
I forgot to say what I would do in my dream job.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm living the dream right now. I'm retired. I get to be have a lot of time with my grown children as mom, 50 years with my husband as wife, plus some time before we got married, and Grammy. We get to hike in Arizona in the wintertime and fish in Alaska in the summertime, so I'm living my dream job right now.
Well, there's only one answer to that question for me, because I just took this job.
That was a setup for you.
Anyway, but in all seriousness, I'm looking forward to getting to know all of you and working with you.
Welcome.
Thanks.
Yes, welcome.
I'm Tyler Clary. I represent Clark County Water Utilities, and
Gosh, I don't know. I've been part of FACT for a couple of years now. Definitely all virtual until now, so it's great to be in person. My dream job, gosh, I'm trying to think here. I guess the only thing I can say right now, maybe like a river rafting guy. I went rafting last weekend, so that's the first thing that comes to mind.
I'm Michael Watkins. I'm a Rosebud Sioux tribal member, and I represent the Cowlitz Indian tribe. And I would probably say my dream job would be to operate a dog rescue.
I'm Maria Stringer-Inskeep. I'm with the City of La Center. I am a non-elected representative for any cities but Vancouver. And I'm the Director of Administrative Services for my city.
You don't have the copy of the presentation tomorrow for the Port of Venice.
And my dream job would be to be retired like Marla. And I love traveling. And so this year I have Israel on my list in November.
I'm Ashley. I'm a youth representative. I think my dream job would be to be an epidemiologist because I find it really fascinating. That's pretty much it.
I'm Elma. Elma Blum. I am a non-elected representative for the City of Vancouver. My dream job is the one I currently have. I'm a software engineer. If I didn't have that job, I wouldn't be here right now because they're very supportive of me serving the community. And I'm a data nerd.
Mark Collier, and I represent septic installers, maintenance people, and septic designers. And like Marla, my dream job's retirement. You've got a lot of plans and a lot of traveling in Asia. Mm-hmm. Look forward to it.
My name is Paul Childers, and I represent the restaurants of Clark County. I'm in my dream job now. I love the restaurant business. However, I've gone past what I thought would be my most favorite job in the world. And when I started in the business, there was still the big bands. And, you know, people would go to a nightclub and dance and have dinner. And that was when I first started. When I first started, we had the big bands and dancing and all of that. No more. But I enjoy the restaurant business, so that's where I am now.
I'm Remy Houston. I represent the Dental Society here in Clark County. I achieved my first goal, and that's retirement. That was my dream, to make it this far. But I would love to be a critic, a traveling critic for a magazine, and with all expenses paid.
Yeah.
Jeff Arbison, I'm the Administrative Services Director for Public Health. My dream job would probably be a forensic criminologist or white collar crimes.
Wow. Yeah.
Go you.
Well.
Yeah. Go get
them. I'm Dave Fulray with Crescent and Emergency Management. Actually, I really enjoy the job that I'm doing now. However, I also really enjoy spending time with my kids and my grandma.
Good evening. I'm Jeff Moraine. I'm the police chief for the city of Vancouver. I represent Clark County law enforcement here. Been in law enforcement 30 years, and I don't know how much longer I'll stay in it, but my dream job is probably to go back to Italy, where most of my family is.
Wow.
And go work in a winery somewhere.
Wow.
My name is
Miss Cindy
Cannon. I'm the nurse practicing in Clark County. I work at Salmon Creek in the emergency department. Good job. Kind of my dream job, so I'm loving doing that. But if pressed, I also love wine. And so that would be a pretty sweet gig, I think. Just passing out the wine. I love that.
Yeah. I'm Sue Marshall. I represent the County Council, District 5, which is just we're in District 5 right now. Actually, our family farm is just a couple miles to the west of here. I feel like I've had a series of dream jobs in my life, and my current job, although I don't know exactly what kind of agreement is that I'm living here, but I think to be a policymaker on the county council has been an exceptional opportunity. It's challenging and learning a lot. And, you know, so I'm coming from being a farmer and retired to back into the big thing. So I'm living the dream.
Good evening. My name is Andrea Pruitt. My she, your pronouns. I'm the community health director at Clark County Public Health. Oh, this is really hard. I have a lot of things that I'm looking at. I think being a librarian sounds really fantastic right now. Yeah. That's quiet reading. So,
I'm Sarah Garber. I am the representative for Peace Health, Southwest Medical Center. And I would say right now I'm the chief medical officer at Southwest, and that is a pretty awesome job, pretty close to a dream job. But I think what would make it even nicer is if we didn't have to, if I could do this job in a not-for-profit and not have to worry about the finances and the complex side of healthcare. So that would be my dream, is not-for-profit healthcare without worrying about how we pay for it.
I don't know how to follow this all up, because all of these are my dream jobs. I'm Roxanne Wolf. I'm the deputy director for Clark County Public Health. And I think really in the end, when I really get down to it, when I retire, my dream job will be like a garden builder. I was going to say landscape architect, but I don't have that much talent. So garden builder. So that's my dream job.
I'm Arun Druthi Hedrick, and I represent medical doctors in Clark County. I love my job now, so I'm a general adult psychiatrist, but I have a focus in reproductive psychiatry, so I work with women across their reproductive lifespan, from pregnancy through postpartum, through perimenopause and menopause, so it's pretty close to, you know, my dream job. But I think if I had to pick another job, I would probably either be an interior designer or maybe an exobiologist. That was one of my dreams as a kid. I thought I could work for NASA.
Wow. Excuse me. Alan Melnick, I'm the public health director and health officer. This doesn't sound too exciting, but I love local public health. I couldn't think of anything else I would really rather be doing. And there's so many, I mean, as horrible as it has been during the pandemic, you know, thinking back to measles and some of the other stuff, where else are you going to get an experience like this? So it's, and the opportunity to work with folks like you and work with communities. And actually, it's meaningful to me because in medicine, the prevention side does so much more than the other aspects of it. So I'm thrilled to be doing that.
I am Mallory Berry, the executive administrative assistant for this guy. I think my dream job would also be an interior decorator or a gymnast.
Mallory, maybe we should start a company.
That's a good call.
Do interior design. Design maybe the inside of the space shuttle.
And I'm Sandy Brown, and I'm chair of FAC this year, and I represent the Consumer Public Health Services. And my dream job, I think I had it before I retired, where I got to work with the public and teach them about food safety and food preservation. And I've kind of carried some of that over into retirement. But my dream job in retirement, because I love to travel, is to do something about lecturing on cruise ships or travel around the areas. And so when my husband retires, maybe we'll kind of get together and we can both figure that one out. So,
wow.
So retirement dream jobs and other dream jobs. So, well, thank you. It's fun to get to know people and hear your voices in person. I'm just really enjoying this so far. All right, so Mallory did send out a copy of the minutes, and hopefully you had a chance to read them. I don't think they're attached in our packets.
No, I'm sorry.
That's fine. So hopefully you all had a chance to read over those minutes. Do we have any comments or additions or changes to the minutes that you recall? All right, hearing none, yes.
I move to approve.
Okay, thank you.
I second.
Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, motion passed. Okay, Dr. Melnick, do you want to update us on any vacant positions?
I believe the only vacant position we have on FAC is a veterinarian position. And we actually have two applicants. One, we heard from, just sent in an application yesterday. And the other one I'm meeting with had asked to meet to discuss it, so I'm meeting with her. And I don't have the names for you, I apologize. But what I'll do is meet with one tomorrow, and then I'll, if it's okay and it's appropriate, I'll send the application materials to the FAC executive and we can discuss it, FAC exec meeting, which is what we've done before. So hopefully, with two applicants for the veterinarian mm-hmm. position, we'll get that filled and we'll be right. filled up.
So hopefully at the next meeting we might have an announcement or some progress on that.
Yep.
Great. Thank you. I don't see any members of the public here, so unless we got anything through Mallory.
Nope.
I don't have any public comment. All right, so let's get into the fun part, I think, where we can get up and move around and wiggle from our dinner, and then you'll be ready for your seconds after that. So last meeting we talked a bit about forming some committees, and we've been talking about membership committee and bylaws committee, and we need to have members, and there seems to be four or five people that keep volunteering for all of the committees. And I think, you know, it's kind of hard to know what the committees are about and what our focus is. And so tonight we kind of want to talk a little bit about what kinds of committees do we need to have, what kind of training do we need to have around those, what's a good term limit, what's a good expectation and roles of members on committees, given what the specific committees are. We have a new role as FAC in being more active in the community and being more active with the Board of Health. And so as we're trying to get on board with that new role, some of the committees need to be more active, or we might have to have different kinds of committees that might be short term or they might be long term. So before we can, as an executive board, we didn't really want to be the ones deciding what committees we needed. Although there's some obvious ones like membership, nominations, bylaws, things like that. But what are some other kinds of committees that we might need or that we could foresee? So we kind of want to have a brainstorming session tonight around that. And we're going to break you into three groups. And you'll see that there's some paper on the walls. There's one behind me, one behind Jeff, and then one over here behind Roxanne. We're going to break into three groups, and we're going to have note takers, and we'll have about 10 minutes to discuss the question at hand, whatever your group is. And Mallory will be our timekeeper, and at the end of 10 minutes, we'll be asked to move to another group. So, as I said, the first group is talking about what is a reasonable committee commitment for FAC members, and what are some creative ways to ensure our participation. I think that one's behind me is station one. Number two is over here behind Roxanne, and it's what goals and objectives do you see FAC committee having in order to meet the FAC's new overall purpose? And then prompt number three is behind Jeff, and that one is what kind of training and learning opportunities might you need to support your role as a FAC member and a contributing member to committees? Okay, so we'll have you work in each group at 10 minutes. We'll move. The note taker will kind of review what the highlights of the previous group said so that you can kind of add to it or say, yes, I really like that idea, so that we have a really robust group of suggestions for the executive committee to ponder over at their next meeting. Any questions about how we're going to do this? All right, let's start with Marla, because Aru is still eating. And count off by 1, 2, 3.
Okay, so 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
Okay, so the ones will come back here and gather, the twos over here, and the threes over there.
And I will give you a 2-minute warning before we move.
And how do they move? The ones go to twos, and the twos go to three, and the threes go to one.
Yes. Okay.
All right, let's see.
That makes sense.
Jeff.
He can be a three.
Yeah. Jeff, you're a three.
Yeah.
You're back there.
You're a one.
How are you? Good to see you.
Okay, I'm a two.
I'm tall. I'm tall. Can I go
to that place? Give everyone time to get to their spots, all right?
So I'm gonna give you some framing before you read this. All right? One, two, brown.
Okay.
So, if I were to just ask you what goals or objectives you had for committees, right, ones that exist or ones that don't, I think that would be a hard question to answer.
All right, so this is a wonderful basically what we'll do is
core of the objectives underneath your purpose is
so this
right
is the
now.
So what is the goal of those four commitment for faculty members
objectives
and what are creative ways of participation in
highlights. So, right, that's why. So like, right, where I want you to focus on your purpose, right? What goals or objectives do you have relative to what you're supposed to be doing, right?
One
year.
One
year.
Think about it with what
with
something
like that. 1 year is just too short. Executive committee, membership and nominations, budget.
I would just like to make a comment about that one.
Right.
I think there, so I would like it if we could have enough grace,
right?
So that if somebody really was doing all, they're all
so
being on staff,
somebody on an airplane,
they didn't have the capacity to also do anything.
Because
I think people can contribute in other ways besides committee, and that might be necessary for somebody to sit around.
For those with assessing
the reason. Yeah, or for whatever reason.
Yes, they need like a position.
Yeah,
I think
it's
that.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Okay. We have such diversity in our group.
And compare them to the priorities of the Board of Health. Board of Health's priorities
should be at that time.
And if there could be time set aside at the larger FAC meeting or subcommittee session before or after,
about
one trip or
why not leave that up to the subcommittee? Because each one's going to be different. They're going to make their, kind of make their own set of rules. So instead of making the.
So when you have to apply everybody.
Right, priorities.
But just, I think, having that flexibility.
Oh, flexibility is the key.
Yeah.
Because they're all going to be different.
Some people don't like that proxy.
Every committee should be
doing our job well.
Yeah, there we go.
All right.
Before they close, right?
That would be an objective. The goal would be wants more, you know.
They think it is.
Yeah, alignment, so.
Like if they want to go like to, you know, escape as dessert place to.
So having a party office and maybe having a good progress.
Yeah.
Maybe, like it could be kind of themed, you know, I mean. But like a theme would be like, oh, we're going to theme it around. I don't know, just something like to have.
Right, so yes, scarce resources. So what would a committee that would be doing that type of work?
Whatever, like.
Like how would you title that committee?
You can't avoid it.
Or it could just be.
Bouncing house.
Yeah.
Especially given the conversation, so consider like what this goal and this group would have to do relative to that objective.
And on the screen,
So.
It sounds like research. Because we're researching.
So for money.
Steering committee.
In a location where I can see it.
There's no wrong answers here, by the way. This is just if you think about it, where I could have like to achieve that goal of having priorities. And then we can sort of build in what the activities would be to get us from the first day, right?
That's actually not an additional, but also really an additional.
So if we have a lot of
history, we've been actually being able to think of, yeah, because if he's saying, you know, going kind of completely to that, the other thing, and it just, if they're too small, I just can't keep up with it.
Right, okay, so. So really, it's theory, right? Is it?
And we don't have that now.
Although the doctors in advance is always really.
Not in any formal metronomic sense, no. There's no like regular cadence of time that VAC has, or VAC representation has.
It doesn't have guidance.
Right.
It says we'll do that, which we don't have direct guidance.
It would probably be helpful for, especially for new members.
So we're in a position to that effect, but.
Yes.
So one of the goals we have is alignment, right? And why we want that alignment is because we want to make progress, right? We have to be moving towards the same end result, right? And have a shared understanding and shared mission, right?
No.
So
not only if it's nice to know, but they can immediately
under
the
implementation. And so we're doing parts of this right now. So I can tell you what the priorities are, what the non-tax priorities are, or how you decide
Board
of Health, right, currently operates based on individualized interests. So this is our starting point. So how do we take this from here?
2 minute warning.
What's your role in maximizing
what the past has been, how long the committee meetings, or in the past, or where did they meet?
But then how do you respond to the hot topics?
Right, so this point in time, that we might not need to be addressed. There are outside things we can do.
About just the things about how it could work to be issues that just flare.
Was it tried?
If the topic is related to a site where we can have a field trip would be nice. Just to see. I don't have a great example that comes to my head, but it looks like environmental services. Like there might be.
Right, you will, none of these are good nor bad, but just going to face some scenarios, right? So hopefully we can tell space that's going to make sure when you have some decisions you make impact on the time, right? Or, you know,
Time is up. Time to switch groups. Please rotate clockwise.
Well, question two is, what goals or objectives do you have about FAC committees related to overall participation? The word I want you to focus on with this question is, what is your purpose as a committee? You serve as a representative body, right, on behalf of all communities living in Clark County, and you are the voice, right, to be able to go back and forth between the health department and board of health, and really advocate on behalf of health. To that end, right, under your purpose in this document, there are four guiding principles about how this role should take that task and that responsibility on, right? Every decision we make should be made highly brainwashed, right? Targeting universalism. We want the most rigorous framework we can use to ensure the well-being of all of our communities is our next, right? We also want to be able to set our priorities, evaluate our priorities, and then inform recommendations that are made by our health specifically. So, knowing what we know about what this group does, what's the most important thing that you can do with a committee right now?
Is that all you got?
That really kind of was able to get back to the fact that we don't have a line, right? Clark County Public Health has a set of goals, the community has a set of goals, the Board of Health has no articulated goals or priorities, and nor does FAC, right? We know what our communities are asking for. There's lots of qualitative and quantitative to support what our communities are saying in order to make. So then a potential opportunity would be to invite the members of this body to
approve
what Board of organizational structure. Okay. The role is in improving those health outcomes. What are things you think about in terms of how you want to use the opportunity to use your voice?
I think it's important that the members find it.
Knowing what you know about your day-to-day experience.
So they know what the lady committee wants.
And that's an area where we have some representation.
And actually, we're a volunteer group in
the
first place.
We
should be able to offer an area, and we'll be someone who might feel like they would be better
than
some other area has a
representation as a member obligation. So as a monolithic statement, like if I talk to a single black mother, I'm talking to that one.
So there's some counterpoint.
I don't expect their experience to represent the experience of all other black communities in Clark County.
No, that's actually
in terms of so that could be an area, right? Do we want to have a very specific committee design just work on indigenous and tribal communications and understanding what the health needs are?
Or just other, not just tribal, but underrepresented communities that might not hear from as much.
Yes. And so that's what's been interesting about our community assessment process.
Two-minute warning.
I mean, I see where some people align the properties and progress toward health outcomes. I mean, that would be the general idea, but I don't even know if we're, like, I think in general that would be the thought. But I don't know if we're more specific than that right now. Maybe we can in a little of a health assessment, community health assessment. If we're not to the point where we know exactly what the priorities are, then we can't really make committees to meet those until we know what they are. Right? So if once we were closing out data collection right now, and we want to move into, okay, so we're going to use all of these available to be collected by, I would say, upwards of 40 different organizations working in county.
One thing I don't see up there is strengthening your partnerships with others in the community. Share House, Food Bank, religious groups, making connections there so we don't become repetitive.
Because subcommittees don't, they're not their full-time job. I do feel like these budget subcommittees have to be small to maintain transparency. But what I see oftentimes in the subcommittee is that
Knowing that we're talking about what it looks like to committees, set them up, prepare for them, and have them be effective, right? And everything you know about your disciplines and being alive and having a state of health. The question is, what goals or objective do you see the fact that he's having in order to meet his overall purpose? So the words that we want to focus on is, what's your purpose? Functions and agency. We had our Board of Health
who informs and decides the budget, policy. We have FAC, you are actually the expert body representing our community, right? FAC doesn't have any priorities. CCPH uses our community priorities as our proxy and aligning best practice to the Board of Health, as you know. What is FAC's job is helping Board of Health to determine and operationalize board priorities and set forth.
So more like we also talk about that space.
The goal is aligned priorities. To do that, we have progress towards health outcomes, and get progress towards health outcomes.
Well, we are public health representatives, and the goal is very dependent upon what is the current.
That's exactly what we were.
What is the current?
That's
a big portion of
community care.
Or even on a complaint.
I always tell my daughter, sorry, that's even issue.
Sometimes it just doesn't fit up a lot of times. Like you're interested in
the education area.
I don't think so.
We have to
What I would like to see too is have guest speakers from our partners.
I think that's where they're trying to call out with the field trip beer.
Share
house. Religious
groups,
representative of a public health concern.
I think it's on here, but if there's time to set aside some time within our FAC meeting for people to gather, agendas are usually pretty full, so there's no time to do that. Occasionally,
what's the
whatever we do have time for. If you and I are on the same committee, can we have
a process piece? It's designed to be garbage. So what can FAC do to transition network advocacy into a pure policy and oversight? That's a state level.
That's kind of how we're at now, right? The same level as
FAC.
It could be because they
have the bank to go after the healthcare authority. Right, but what you can see globally, you can show this to take on access to care. Network advocacy is
massive in health, part of it.
Right?
Immediate and one of the things we talked about
in acute care, chronic care, So it just depends on what you would want to do.
Is there a FAC member that's part of the onboarding credit?
Yeah. Well, we have a membership committee, and so that's one thing that I think we could talk about the membership committee.
Just to manage general
Or a mentoring assistant.
That's awesome.
You know, can she
or maybe identify
wrapping
a length
assessment.
Of how many meetings does a committee have? Maybe like what committees, maybe once or twice a year.
Yes. Yep. That will help us prioritize.
Monthly.
That's my question.
So what?
Identify what up front to everybody what the commitment is.
Got it. Okay.
A lot of spells.
Well, and that's the whole thing, right? I would expect you all to have your own individual bias, right? And I bet if the environment showed up on here, that'd be your priority set. Safety should be yours,
Two-minute warning.
I'm going to give them a decision point A, and they're all going to use the same criteria to make a decision on whether to do or not with this issue. They don't have that.
Question. So when this collective group has made an advisory decision that is consensus and disagreed upon,
do you want facts?
We're going to come back and actually kind of go through this, but you guys do
want facts.
We're
asking for like partnerships, right?
So let's say you get to a place where you have a decision you want to act on the other day. That's when you use all the
Time is up.
Thank you.
Okay, remember there's still more food, so we've got a couple minutes if you want to go get another plate full. Now's your time.
I already did this.
Good. You didn't need my okay, did you?
That was the best thing on the menu, what you have right there.
Oh, right.
Rice and the curry. Yeah.
So I love the salad.
Are we supposed to go over, or are we just going to quickly?
Just we've got a couple minutes. Yeah.
Now, when you do your thing, I'm going to take
it. I know.
Oh, thank you.
I'm on the whiteboard. Can I just
take it?
But I don't think it's something to affect.
Because we're not going to necessarily be focusing on what people are saying up there. I think
no, not like this.
Not like this.
And the onions, I'm like, onions and strawberries.
All right. So how did we like that activity? Get up and wiggle a little? Good. Good. So let's have just a brief, like, 1 minute summary from each of the note takers, kind of some general themes that came from your discussions. And we'll start with Roxanne's number one.
Okay, number one. Okay. So, great ideas. What we're wanting is a lot of flexibility around our subcommittees. We want people to be able to, number one, come into FAC with an understanding of onboarding, an understanding of what the committees are, so that they could potentially self-select. We want a lot of flexibility so people can opt out if they don't have an opportunity for whatever reason, the child care issues or whatever, and they can't serve on a committee. We want to make sure that there's some flexibility and options to opt in and out. The other thing is food. Possibly, as I had said before, beer and wine is always good, but we'll see about that. And then also opportunities to have like a hybrid option. So meeting in person is great, but also having a hybrid option. Potentially also having an opportunity for mentoring and a buddy system, and then potentially even doing some job shadowing or whatever so we can learn a little bit more about what the committee is working on. Maybe there would be some job shadowing with public health staff and that sort of thing. So anything else, Nate, that from you guys that I didn't say that you felt like was super important? I think onboarding better, that's another thing. Onboarding people better so they really know what the committees are and what the committees do.
Okay, great. Perfect. All right, let's see. Andrea, number two.
Okay, station two was dedicated to getting a sense of what goals and objectives would be necessary to advance FAC's purpose. And I think the three groups really landed on a need for alignment, better articulated alignment between Clark County Public Health, FAC, and Board of Health. And getting an understanding of whose needs are represented and how do we take the defined community need and systematize our approach to setting priorities in order to then evaluate and make recommendations on policy and advocacy positions in front of the board. And in order to do that, we need to be clear on whose priorities we're centering, right? And right now, FAC does not have a set of priorities. And we're working with the community to lift up and highlight what our communities have articulated as those priorities, and then we want to be able to take that to our Board of Health so we all have the same set of goals and objectives related to improving community health, so such that then we can start to have more powerful regular conversations about how to utilize resources and make decisions on policy and our budget.
All right.
Anything I left out?
Great. Okay, Dr. Milne?
Station three was what training and learning opportunities do you need or want to support your role as a FAC member and as a contributing community member? So people wanted a bit more onboarding on the FAC mission and goals and also the organizational structure, public health. They wanted ongoing learning about the budget, including if there are new proposals or new funding, how does this impact the budget? They wanted to know where you're coming from in terms of your business or occupation, where you represent, how does that apply to public health? And along with that, how does diversity, including lived experience, racial equity apply to public health? What did FAC do in the past? It was interesting, the history of that, and what particular positions represented positions, what have they done in the past on FAC? What are our limits? Folks wanted to know in terms of learning and training, what are our limits both right and left on the political agenda as in terms of local and state? People wanted to know more about statistically data on the public health, big public health issues. We talked a little bit about the CHA and the CHIP. Environmental scan, what is public health facing right now? Avenues for advocacy, like the recent issue around mosquitoes and how FAC members and committees could have been an advocate around that. FAC organizational structure, FEHS funding, more information about that. How can grant applications, the grant application process, how FAC can members want to know some learning about how they could assist with that. What does the State Board of Health do? Ongoing training on equity and diversity. How do we assess our leadership, including our committee leadership? There was some interest in field trips, public health field trips, so FAC members have a better understanding of what some of the public health programs directly do. We'd like some more training around guest speakers from partner organizations. I go on and on. I think I covered some of the highlights about this, but you know, interest in learning how to be advocates and do advocacy work. Okay, I'll leave it at that. Does anybody have anything to add? That was a mouthful. Okay.
Great. Well, we came up with a lot of great ideas in such a short amount of time in doing this little round robin, so I thank you for all your input. And now it'll be up to the executive committee to kind of sort through this and bring some things back to the group and see what we come up with for the committee. So be ready to want to join one of them. You never know which one's going to have the most food and beverage. All right. Last meeting, we also talked about decision-making and how Robert's Rules of Order is a bit outdated or isn't always appropriate for different kinds of decisions that we're making. And so we want to start a conversation. The Bylaws Committee, which is made up of Marla and myself, Peggy, Michelle, and Remy. And so we started looking at the bylaws and starting to look at decision-making models and really felt like we needed to have a conversation with the larger group about decision-making models that are out there, which ones have been used in groups that you've been in, how effective are they, and so on. So Marla's going to lead a discussion about decision-making models and the different ones that are out there and the ones we've had experiences with, so that we can take that information back to the Bylaws Committee to start formulating some recommendations back to you about how we make decisions within FAC. Do we continue to use Robert's Rules? Do we use a different method? Do we use different forms of decision making depending on what the issue is? And so I'm just going to turn this over to Marla to lead a discussion to get some base information for the Bylaws Committee to be able to move forward.
Great. Thank you, Sandy. And Sandy's going to take some notes, so that will be helpful. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about Robert's Rules of Order, but I do want to just introduce this topic by saying that the purpose of any kind of like a parliamentary authority in which Robert Rules is the purpose of it is for facilitating discussion and decision making. And also it's used as a discipline tool and for purposes of debate. So that that's kind of what the purpose of it would be. Decision making is probably the thing that you see most often in a legislative meeting. There's a lot of motions put out there and a lot of discussion about them, and eventually it comes to a vote and life moves on. And so the reason we're having this conversation about the fact that we have in our bylaws that we use Robert's Rules, and that's what we have used, is what I'm familiar with from a lot of groups that I've been familiar with and a few boards that I've been on. And to be honest, I never really studied it. So, and just as a little background, Robert Rules was designed in 1876 by an Army officer, and he created it for the use when he had a meeting coming up at his church. And it actually that just grew and grew and grew from there. And what I read most recently on a website called Board Effect, which is a pretty highly regarded board management support agency, they said that the latest version has 700 pages.
Oh my gosh.
And I think that kind of says it all. Robert's Rules of Order is pretty complicated. And there's all kinds of revised versions, simplified versions. There must be hundreds of versions of Robert Rules of Order because people keep trying to take something that, in my opinion, is totally unwieldy and make it work for them because that's what we've always done. But it doesn't mean we have to always do it. We may decide that's best for us and it works for us and it's familiar and we want to keep going with it, and that would be fine. But the purpose of this discussion is to see if that's what we want to do and see what else there is out there. So I'm going to start, what's going to happen next is I'm going to put some questions out to the large group. And I thought that I would be the guinea pig and speak up. The first question is, what group decision-making models or processes have you experienced? And I already told you I've had some experience with Robert Rules of Order. My experience with that is that I think that a lot of times people don't speak up because they don't know when it's their turn. They don't know how to ask for an opportunity to speak. And so they get stymied by the rules. So I feel that it can be somewhat limiting. Number of years ago, I was asked if I would run the ER at Seattle Children's because the director, in a period of downsizing, just decided to leave, and the next day she was gone. And so I stepped in the next day, and it was going to be a permanent position. The staff was good with that, and we just start fresh. So the first thing I did with them, I'll just give you an example of one I experienced because I had to do something quickly. And I said, well, let's decide right now, how are we going to make decisions together? And I said, the only format I know is the five-finger method. I make the decision all by myself with no input from you. I make the decision with input from you. We all make the decision together and come to consensus. You make the decision with input from me, or you make the decision by yourself. And I said, personally, I would love it if you could make as many decisions as possible by yourself. But when we have two helicopters trying to land on one helipad at the same time, then I'm going to make the decision by myself. And that is how we operated. Pretty simple. It didn't work for everything, but I want to hear from you, what group decision-making models or processes have you experienced? And along with that, what did you like or not like about that process? So who would like to go next?
I can go. So I was looking at your types of decision-making approaches. So I have to say, at my work, we do consensus a lot, like a lot. That is probably our go-to decision-making model. And sometimes it can be a little unwieldy, right? Because ultimately we all have to reach a consensus. But I think it builds a lot of trust, and I think it does encourage people to compromise. So I like consensus. We've also done leader rule with discussion, which I think can also work really well when people feel like they've been heard. And when leadership is transparent about why certain decisions have been made. So those are the two that I tend to really favor.
And you guys should all have this document that she's talking about.
It's attached to your agenda.
So that was helpful. Thank you, Maru. So who else would like to share what process you're familiar with and how have you liked it or not liked it?
So I sit on the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Boards as a delegate, and that board represents 43 tribes in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, and they operate on a consensus basis. Same thing, it gathers a lot of support. When we pass a resolution, all 43 tribes are in support of it. It can be a little bit frustrating because all it takes is one tribe to say no, and then usually that resolution dies or gets tabled. So it could make sometimes work a little bit harder.
But they can also say, I can live with it without saying, yeah, I support it, right? So, okay.
So what way does the Cowlitz Tribal Council function?
They usually do roll call votes. Sometimes they do, you know, just a motion that is on their own. Sometimes it's a majority vote. So.
Thank you, that's good. That's different working with individuals. You're talking about working with large groups. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty complex. Other examples of methods that you've experienced that you've liked or haven't liked, and why? What haven't you liked or liked?
I've had an opportunity to work with almost all of them. and each of them sort of has a place that's where they're more effective than others. I think if you can work towards consensus, that's always good. At some point, however, you may have to either resort to a leader rule without discuss or with discussion, or the majority. It kind of depends on the issue that you're working for and the urgency of the issue that you're working through. I think all of them are effective and have their place, with the exception of, yeah, they all have their place, because even at times the leadership without discussion, if you have an emergent situation, you got it.
Great, thank you. Anyone else want to offer up an experience they've had?
I can comment a little bit on what Dave said. I think you're right. Like every I've seen every one of these be totally appropriate. And the thing about that is it's important knowing what type of decision making you're getting yourself involved in from the get-go. If the leader says, I'm making this decision and I'm not going to ask you, that's one thing. And that can be okay for many things. Or I you can tell me what you want, but I'm going to make the decision regardless, you know, using them. So all of these have the right place and the right, but knowing what type of decision you're getting yourself into is really helpful.
I think that's so important. That was one of the reasons that I used the example that I gave, so that I could just say with the staff, here's something that we're up against, and here's the way we're going to make the decision. And so people knew ahead of time. Because sometimes people feel like they gave a lot of input, and where did that go? You know, why did that bother? So we have another question, but I want to just give one more opportunity if anybody wants to.
Can I ask a question?
Sure, please.
So the example you gave at the hospital was more of so I'm wondering, and maybe that's one of the questions you have, how the organization itself relates to what the decision-making process is, because FAC isn't dealing with an operational issue like where a helicopter should land. Mm-hmm. It's dealing with other broader issues.
Yes.
So I don't know if it's one of the questions you have, but how does that relate to what kind of decision-making process you're going to use?
That specific question, based on what I said, a broader example of a decision-making would be when the hospital, Seattle Children's, was so full that there was not a single bed. You couldn't even make bunk beds. And there were still patients that were showing up in the ER that needed to be taken care of. And ambulances were driving patients around town just waiting for the next available bed anywhere. And that is a bigger system issue that requires bigger decision making.
But it's also a different fundamentally type of operation than FAC is. It's a service delivery system.
Right.
Whereas you guys are working on things like policy
and
recommendations. So that's all I'm asking.
Well, I think what I would say to that, though, is that the upstream of that is policy. Because when you have a situation like I just described, you have to look at your policies so that you can try to affect some change so that's not happening every winter.
Right.
So that would be my response to that. That's a really great point. So do you have some examples, Colin, about...
I don't want to bias the group because I have a bias about this, but in terms of the kind of work we do here and the diversity of this group here and what you said earlier about input, I would lean towards consensus works for me. But that's my bias.
Yeah. Anybody else want to talk about that? The next question is, what have you seen work well or not at all when groups try to come to a decision around a potentially divisive or a complex issue? So any thoughts on that? So now we're not talking about just day-to-day policy or what have you, but something that's complex, needs some decision-making, is consensus still the methodology that you can use, or do you see an opportunity for another way to think about it? Thoughts on that?
I think if we're doing a policy and there's not consensus, and then we, for instance, we're reporting to the Board of Health, both sides should be presented.
I like,
thank you.
Dr. Melnick mentioned, you know, if you can't come to a consensus, then can you live with this? You know, there's another like subset of decision making where you, I think it's similar to the five fingers, like absolutely not, maybe, you know, kind of across the board of how terrible do I feel about this passing, or can I live with this?
Mm-hmm.
And so in the case where not everybody agrees, maybe that could help people feel like they're still getting their needs met and we can come to some kind of agreement.
That's my understanding. I know we have this here, but my understanding of the consensus process is that not everybody has to completely agree, but they can all live with it. I may be wrong about that. I may be wrong about my definition of consensus, but that's how I understand it from having worked with it.
And I've seen a situation where the voting method was, if I really, really agree, I put up my five fingers. If I absolutely cannot live with it, then it's obsessed. Right. Mm-hmm. And then there's various other finger combinations in between.
Just this one.
So let's see, so that we make sure that we get to each of these. I don't want to miss any. What is important to you about group decision making, and how do you want to feel before, during, and after? So what is it that matters to you?
I think everybody needs to be heard. Oh, not everybody needs to be, everybody that wants to be heard needs to be heard, is what I should say, is important, and that everybody is comfortable to be heard. And I think that's where Robert Rules kind of fails sometimes, is that I think sometimes people don't know when they're supposed to speak up with their opinion, but I think it's up to typically the person running that meeting to make sure that they know when it's their time to have their comments heard. But yeah, just making sure that everybody has the opportunity to speak their mind.
That's huge. Really critical. What else?
I think it's also important to, if that person speaks their mind but someone else doesn't understand or makes a decision based on lack of knowledge, that they can be educated if there's expertise in the room to explain the rationale of that decision. Very helpful. So not just say, no, I disagree. Like, you gotta explain why they disagree. Because maybe there's something that's missing that we don't know about.
Very likely. And the second part of this was, how do you want to feel before, during, and after? Thoughts on that?
I think before, I want a really clear understanding of, well, what are we trying to achieve and mm-hmm. how, right? So, like, I want to know, are we all trying to come to a consensus, mm-hmm. or is someone else going to make the decision, but they just want my input right mm-hmm. now? And then, of course, like, I agree with feeling heard, and then I would want to know after the decision has been made, if it's not a consensus, why that decision was made. Like, what are the factors that led to that particular decision?
Yeah.
Because I think otherwise, like, there's an erosion of trust. So yeah, I would want to feel throughout the process mm-hmm. that I'm being heard, and I can trust my leaders that they hear me, and will truly consider what they've heard in their decision making, and then will be transparent about their decision. And I feel like the transparency piece is missing so often, and that's when I think people get really upset, which is understandable.
For good reason. And I think that it's a respect. It's a show of respect. And that's really, really important, that everyone, no matter what their position is, that they're at least treated with dignity and respect. So, and then what suggestions do you have for FAC decision making? What situations does FAC need to make, and
what situations does FACS need to make decisions, and what is an ideal process to do so? So we might not, we're not expecting to have an answer tonight, but we have this list of potential options. You may, between now and when we come back together on this topic, you may think of some other things that you would want to add as possible options based on your own experience or something you've read about. But really take a look at these, and I tend to land on the side of that it's not one size fits all. I also really like consensus, and that fits for a lot of things. But so take a look at that. And then I think for our next steps then, does anybody else have anything they want to add to what we've said or didn't have a chance to speak up?
No, but I appreciate all the research you put into this. That was I learned more about Robert's Rules of Order.
Yeah, there's a lot more to it than I'm sharing, but it could turn into a really big conversation. Well, the next steps then is that the bylaws subcommittee is going to continue reviewing the ideas that we heard today, and they were very helpful, somewhat validating ideas. So thank you for all the suggestions. And then we will look at resources around decision making, and we'll plan an activity to practice alternatives for our June meeting, so we can actually try some things on and see how we think it might fit us.
For our July meeting.
Oh, the July meeting. I say June. So how does that sound?
So we practice different alternatives, you're saying, and come up with one that fits? Okay.
That was the suggestion.
Does it need to be, are we looking to hone in on one of these, or?
No. Well, I think what the options are, we could hone in on one, but I think what I'm hearing is that there's opportunity to use different ones for different circumstances.
Yeah.
So that might be something that we could better articulate, like, what are the times that we might not be able to use consensus? Because I hear a lot of agreement about that would be the preferred when that can work.
And I think coming up with suggestions of situations in which you might use one over another, or you would move from one to the next, would be helpful. So again, during the onboarding and us learning how we're going to function, we understand that. And then as issues come up, we would say, well, we're going to probably use consensus or whatever. But I think giving the bylaws committee some ideas, and by practicing different methods with a particular scenario, might help us make those decisions as well.
Thank you for all of your comments and thoughts. And if you think of anything between now and our next meeting, feel free to send them to me, to Sandy,
and
Mallory, and then the bylaws subcommittee can continue to work with that additional information. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Marla.
Sure. Great work.
All right. Next up is Jeff on budget.
Subcommittee has met twice. I'll say a few words. Just take one set and then pass. Just back.
Oh, I see.
Thank you. Did you get a copy? That may be the last one.
Yeah.
I should have done that.
He's missing.
Who needs a copy?
I just
spelled it out. Did everybody get a copy?
You got one?
I got
one. You guys have enough now?
Yeah, we got enough.
Okay.
I got it. Yeah, I'm under the packet.
Anything
else missing?
Okay. So the budget subcommittee of met twice. We meet again this coming week. Week after next. I have some good news. We received informal word of our foundational public health services allotment for fiscal year 2024, which starts July 1st of this year. It was more than expected. We do have a balanced budget. Informal balance budget. We're still waiting on word from the county manager, who's also serving as the interim human resources director, on a couple of the adjustments we're proposing. And until we hear back on those, we're not going to get public to the final budget numbers. We want to make sure everything's going to work. But as of right now, we do have a balanced budget in draft. In your packet, there should be three pieces. The county budget calendar, I wanted to share that with FAC just to again let you know of the overall process. I highlighted the big items for us. Our budget, all departments and offices, their budgets are due August 14th. And I need about 2 weeks going into that to compile everything and then enter it into the county budget system. It's a very large budget. Our requests are actually published October 2nd. So everything that we are proposing, that's when that goes public. We meet with the county manager between October 2nd and 13th. That's to review our proposal. And then the county manager's budget is published November 7th. And then last but not least, the public hearing for the budget adoption is that first week of December. December 5th is for the electives, for example, the assessor and clerk and treasurer and auditor, et cetera. And then the 5th, that Tuesday hearing, that is for the departments such as us and Public Works and Community Services, et cetera, if there are questions for us. They have needed the Wednesday session before. It's been several years. I've been here a long time. I've not seen them need that Wednesday session in a while. Are there any questions on the calendar? We're making pretty good progress. Like I said, we have an informally balanced budget right now, so it's looking okay. Any questions on the budget calendar or the process?
How many public hearings are required?
What's that?
How many public hearings are required?
I think there's a minimum of 2. Okay. Yeah. Any other questions on the calendar? The next page, the budget subcommittee, it's difficult to do a tremendous deep dive into our budget. So the budget subcommittee, we talked about how we make decisions. And I did review with that our priority-based budgeting measures. It's been probably a year. So I also put this in the packet again. These are the current priority-based budgeting measures that we have in our budget process. And I'll just go through a few of these. You know, is it a mandated function? Are we providing services beyond the mandate? And it gets down to, is this a regional service? Is it evidence-based? And I've been a champion of what's called priority-based budgeting my entire career. I think it's at least a better decision-making. Right now, a lot of governments use what's called the baseline budget model, which is what we do in Clark County. And you get your baseline budget pretty much regardless. So there's no views of looking at, is this still a priority service that, for example, the policymakers should be funding. So I've always been in favor of that priority-based budget approach. So we have to do that internally in public health because we have a structural budget issue, and that is, again, lack. Our revenue in typical years is flat, and our expenses obviously grow. So we've had to use a priority-based budgeting approach numerous times, and we'll be really honest to decide what programs to cut, you know. It's always difficult. There's survivor guilt is a real thing. I was here when we cut our department in half, and that was the first really, really large priority-based budgeting approach that we had to take. It's been 15 years ago. Anyway, we still use a model like this. This is a list of our current measures. I wanted to share that because the budget subcommittee, knowing that we can't go through every line of the budget and we can't talk about everything that's there, but they did want to talk about how our decisions are made. And again, this priority-based modeling, these current measures are some of the things that we do look at. The 2024 budget process we're working on now, we've not had to make a lot of difficult decisions. It's the final year of our FPHS rollout from the state of Washington. This is the final year. Everything we've received has said the 2025 fiscal year amount will be the same. So again, with that structural budget issue, the 2025 budget process next year will probably, I shouldn't say probably, we will be needing to use some kind of priority-based budgeting approach to decide where do we trim the budget. So after COVID and measles and 3 years of FPHS and taking on, solid waste or the MEO, those have all been things that have actually helped our budget. But now it's going to be back to what I was used to pre those things happening, and that is, how can we be strategic? How can we look for ways to increase revenues, for example? But in the end, we'll probably end up losing positions eventually. So anyway, any questions on the priority-based budgeting measures that are in place now? Maybe a future FAC meeting after this budget is approved, we can go through the measures with FAC, looking at our strategic plan, our charter chip, and update these as needed. But are there any questions on what you've got in front of you on this?
What is FPHS?
Foundational Public Health Services.
Those are determined by the state, what they feel like those are?
Yes. There was, Alan can
So a few years ago, I can answer this in a few sentences. So if you, public health has been historically underfunded, and the state and local, state health department, local health jurisdictions, we have a state organization, have been advocating in the legislature for adequate funding for public health. And a few years ago, an assessment was done and found that we were underfunded by about $400 million. And since then, the legislature in subsequent sessions has been supporting new state funding for what we call foundational public health services. Those are things like, so there's both services and capability. So the services are things like communicable disease control, environmental health. Those are all foundational. I'm just giving you a few examples. And then the capabilities are adequate infrastructure, including your finance system, your information systems. Those are foundational capabilities. And the state has been progressively giving us more money every biennium, and that's how we're able to add some positions here. We've added a significant number of positions over the last several years. Did I cover that well, Jeff?
Yeah, we got, in my time here, we got down to below 80 FTE in public health funding. Right now we're at 156, I believe. So we've almost doubled from our low.
But that's not going to last forever. Well, the money is ongoing, but the other point Jeff has made, and where FAC may actually help advocate, is Jeff has pointed out and taught me that most, if not all, of our funding sources are not indexed. So they remain flat, and then our costs go up, like workforce and everything else. So that's why he's alluding to, if things aren't indexed, then we end up on like a roller coaster. A few years down the line, we're making cuts.
I have a question. I'd be curious about the ARPA dollars. I don't know exactly what's come to the department. And I know they're going to, in some instances, meet out over several years. What impact that has? You don't need to answer.
Well, it's a great question. I do. So ARPA dollars can be spent through 2026. They have to be obligated. If it's done in 2025 or 2026, they've got to be obligated to
shut down
by the end of 2024.
She's not here.
We're actually replacing both of our large technology systems. They were overdue. They were beyond their useful. The council awarded us ARPA dollars to replace both of those systems, which is fantastic. ARPA is.
I really thought this was a great job.
We're very
great. And then the other thing that's coming down is the opioid settlement money, which I don't know how that will impact the Department of Health, but one would think it would
The only thing I can say about that, and Andrea may want to say something, is it seems like there was a statewide process where they've already decided on buckets that this funding is going to go into. I think you were at that meeting at the, and you heard that, right?
It will be contracted, and then the money will be dispersed
into those buckets. And Caroline, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it right. They're formerly Beacon. They're going to be distributing the dollars and choosing the people who are on the council or committee.
I think the council will have some influence in that process.
Okay. Oh, good.
I think the buckets were mandated in the settlement, as I understand it.
That's correct. Yes, the scope of services, right? The allowable expenditures, scopes have been determined at the state level for all of the settlements that are coming through the state. So the state will receive carve out of monies, right, as will locals. Everyone operates from the same scope, same playbook. So there's approved activities and uses for funds, and right, how you use those funds and how you allocate those monies locally is up to, right, the organizing body. And who selects that organizing body matters, right, because they decide which applications they fund and which applications they don't.
And it'll be a regional body.
Right. They're in alignment with the Accountable Communities for Health. They mimic those regional hubs, right?
There might be an additional.
There's nine regions, right. Andrea? Are there nine regions?
Or are we going to get another county?
We might get
the size, yeah. So I think what makes it important isn't necessarily the dollar value, but rather how the funds are distributed in alignment with what already exists in a region and where the needs are, right? The allocations are based on a formula of, I think, right, substance involved person and the number of fatalities over a period of years. So it's really important for the community to figure out where the money should go relative to where money is already going. So you want to make sure that you're funding money where it's needed. And who decides, right? It's the same conversation we're having here, different people. Who's deciding and using what framework, right? What data do they have to support their decision making? And I would agree, I think it's a very, very important thing that the council has oversight of who gets to decide, right?
So I would just say if Ben has opinions on that.
That might be a great ad hoc committee.
I'll
be in that group.
All right. Yeah, those are amazing questions. So the last piece in the packet, FAC does play an advisory role on our budget and our fees. We had one-on-ones with three of the five counselors yesterday. We tried to meet with two industry groups last night, the on-site septic services TAC and the drinking water TAC. We told the Board of Health, the County Council, which is the Board of Health, we would also get feedback from FAC on the fee process. But attached is the presentation that we gave to FAC, to the Board of Health members in the one-on-ones. I'd like to review that with you. I did not think of this as being necessary until a little while back.
Hey Jeff, for some of the new folks, just TAC is a technical advisory committee.
Sorry.
Those are industry representatives. So for those of you who don't know, the regulated industry, for example, the septic installers, the designers have a TAC. So when we're talking about fees and all that, we bring that to the technical advisory council. So the industry has input as well. Sorry, Jeff, but I just want to make sure that we throw a lot of acronyms around in public health.
So I'd like to go through this with you. I'll do it as quickly as I can, and then answer the questions, and hopefully I'll provide enough information to garner support for the models here. So again, this was developed for the one-on-ones with the Board of Health members. We do need guidance for development of the 2024 fee schedule updating ordinance, and we're going to bringing that forward to the September Board of Health. Some background, environmental public health fee revenue, it funds activities in all but two of our environmental health programs, drinking water protection, recreational water safety, solid and hazardous waste, on-site septic, permitting operations and maintenance, food safety, and then school health and safety. This is the great part. EPH fees are calculated to align with our program expenses, less than the program income. There is zero profit built into these. We're not trying to make money. These are strictly calculated to fund the programs. Something else that's not on this slide, but I bring it up when I get the chance. Our model has been reviewed by the state auditor's office on three different occasions, and we've been given a clean bill of health every time. In 2010, the Board of Health made the decision to pull greater good out of the fees and fund those with general fund. So from 2011 to 2018, program costs were supplemented by general fund to cover those greater good costs. Greater goods are, it's work performed but not related to the license, permit, or fee, such things as complaint investigations, outbreak investigations, foodborne illness, etc. I'll jump to the chase. In 2017-2018, they realized this is real expensive, the greater good. And we used to cover that through fees, we need to get back to that. So the fee adjustment timeline, I didn't go back all the way, but in 2012 and 2016, the Board of Health said, do not even bring us adjustment proposals, we're not even going to try to consider them. You can figure out how to fund those on your own. 2017-18, that was the last biennial budget. There was an adjustment of 1.35%. And then 2019, that's when they adopted the policy to begin to move back towards getting the fees, covering all of the greater good. That was a large increase of 29.13%, followed by 14.32, 9.14, 3.19. Again, that got us moving back towards that full cost in our fees. The current 2023, we actually were able to lower the fees by 0.04%. It was almost going to be flat. I'm sorry to try to put you all to sleep, but. So for 2024, the first scenario is the current Board of Health policy. And you see they're marked in green, the 90% cost recovery in two programs. Those are the two programs that are most affected by any economic swings. In 2008-2009, those two programs were absolutely decimated. And they were decimated to the point that we didn't have resources to even address those greater good, that greater good work. So having a 90% cost recovery and a 10% cost share out of the general fund, if the economy does that again, which it will eventually, it allows some funding to maintain that greater good work. So that the current Board of Health policy, we just jumped to that bottom line, it's overall adjustment of 4.34%. There are obviously, you can see that 29.08 for school health and safety. It's a bit of a misnomer. We've been subsidizing for the last 3 years, three new fees in that program, the environmental health assessments with MPHS funding. Those are going up about 250%, those three fees. Everything else in the program is going up around 5.8%. So it's just those three fees where that subsidy was removed that are going up and making that 29.08% look really bad.
Can I just say something there? So philosophically, if I can say this, the school, these are mandated services around school safety inspections like playgrounds, kitchens, new construction. The FEHS, we're thinking that the schools, this is a fee that the schools can pay so that we can use FEHS funding for financial public health services. So that's where this, so that's why you're seeing an increase of 29%, 29.08% in the fees that the schools will be paying for.
These are mandated services, and how they're paid for really is of the purview of the Board of Health. They can say, I don't want any fees at all, here's general fund to pay for all this. They can set fees wherever they want, really. We do bring other scenarios. So you'll see the next page is a scenario number two, where we move the 90% cost recovery to 95, and then a scenario three, where we get all programs back to full cost through fees. While it is their purview, we are asked typically, what's our opinion? We would like to maintain the current Board of Health policy of that 90% cost recovery through fees in those two programs. Again, for the reasons I stated, when there is the economic downturn, we're already seeing volumes going down in those two programs, for example, and these fees include a vacant position being eliminated already. So we're already to a point where the volumes are down low enough where we're eliminating the vacant position.
So the reason they're related to economic conditions is when the economy crashes, less construction is done, less homes are built, so people aren't looking for on-site septic permits or drilling wells and stuff like that. Do I have that correctly, yes. Jeff? So we want to keep some money in general fund to cover the greater good, because if we lose everything that's fee-based, if there is a septic disaster somewhere, we won't have the staffing to address that because we won't have any greater good dollars. So we want to leave some of that in general fund. Just want to make sure that that's pretty clear, because... Oh, good. Okay.
So what I had for the Board of Health members is the last page, not the next steps, where we were going to receive guidance at the Board of Health one-on-ones and then review the scenarios with FAC, this group, today, and then review with the technical advisory committees. The next step with the Board of Health is there's going to be a public work session on August 2nd. We have two more one-on-ones to do, and then we'll craft the work session presentation based on the feedback of those one-on-ones. And then last but not least is we'll bring forward the ordinance at the September Board of Health for a court option. So I don't think I need a vote. I don't think I need to go formal, but I don't think. What I can do is review this with you tonight like I did, and then talk to the fact we meet with the budget subcommittee meets on the 11th of July, I believe.
Yes.
If I could ask the budget subcommittee for their approval of this plan, we could ask the full FAC tonight what you think about this. If you have any more questions, I'd love to answer them. I want to be as transparent as possible. COVID, I had received zero audit findings in my entire career, which is something I used to be really proud of. We have two during COVID, but they were not fraud, obviously. I think 21 counties received findings related to COVID funding, so we were that bad, I guess. So, anyway, are there any questions on the fee model? I was going to pass out all 430 fees.
So I'm just curious, when you talk to the TAC, is that what they're called? Mm-hmm. What is that conversation generally like? I mean, are they saying no, we don't want the fees, or
so,
yes, we're okay with this, and if there's disagreement, is it just ultimately up to the Board of Health to say yes or no?
It is up to the Board of Health ultimately. I will say last night was an exact mirror of last year. We did the exact same process. There were zero attendees in your meeting. So the invite was sent and nobody showed. Prior to COVID, the last time I met with the on-site septic TAC, the fees in those programs don't typically swing heavy. We maintain our resources to keep some of them in mind, so they're not huge increases. We do have conversations about, you know, recommendations they might have about combining a couple of fees across programs. Easier said than done sometimes. We try to listen. We've actually made adjustments to the fee schedule based on feedback from those TACs. We have pulled fees apart. We group fees back. So we do take guidance from those committees and look at if we can change the schedule. Does it make sense? I've never had anyone in those meetings tell me this is outrageous. but we've not received feedback in a couple of years from those TACs, unfortunately.
I also think that with the TACs, they want to maintain service levels too, because they're trying to, you know, work with the community and their clients as well, and so they want to make sure that we are able to maintain those services, mm-hmm. and our turnaround time is good for them as well. So I do think that we overall they've been pretty supportive. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest issue is like what Jeff was saying is that, you know, sometimes there's some minor adjustments and that sort of thing. And then we would always take that information back, and that's what we share with Board of Health too. So, is that this is the feedback we got from the tax.
I think when, if I remember correctly, when we first moved towards cost-based reimbursement, because it had been subsidized by general fund for so long, the first few years it was a wider swing. But since then, when we caught up around cost, you know, cost-based reimbursement, the increases have been pretty small.
Yeah.
So it was challenging at the beginning when we might have had more input from the tax, but that's changed.
And Roxanne nailed something else too. The on-site septic tax specifically would say, we're happy that these adjustments are fine, we want to make sure that the level of service is consistent.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's more around the services that they're receiving, mm-hmm. making sure that they're paying what they're paying for.
Right. Thank you.
By the way, this is a perfect example of greater good, just so it makes sense, is on recreational water. You know, we charge a fee for inspection of pools and spas, but you might see us out on the field doing blue-green algae and swim beaches and all that. There is no fee for that. That's greater good. Just to give you an example.
All right. Well, thanks, Jeff. If there's no more comments, we'll move on to the Dr. Milnick. You were going to talk a bit about the EPH overview for the Board of Health.
Yeah, I'm going to be really brief here. Jeff has already talked about the Environmental Public Health Program. So tomorrow with the Board of Health, and the reason we're sharing this with the Board of Health is so, you know, the fee discussions are coming up at the same time. So we're trying to put this into context in terms of what we do. So I'm going to talk with the Board of Health tomorrow about our environmental health programs and specifically focus on three of them. Of course, you know, we can talk about how these are all related, but drinking water, our septic, our on-site septic programs, and our recreational water programs. So I'll be presenting, and we'll be talking about, I'll try to be as high level as possible, but talk about the activities we engage in, as well as some more examples of the greater good as well. So that's, and we're not just talking to the Board of Health, we know it's a public meeting, so hopefully the public will hear about it as well. I hope that was a good enough summary. So you know, you don't want to miss that. I mean, you should be glued to the screening service every moment of that. It'll be mesmerizing.
I think it is broadcast on CBTV starting at 8:30. So if any of you have that, there you go.
Of course. Yeah. And you can always be entertained by the public comments as well. We have the public comments now come after the presentations, because at some point during the, you might recall, especially during the heights of the pandemic, there were so many public commenters we didn't get to the actual discussion. So.
All right, well, we've come to the end of our agenda. I just have one last question, is how did you like being meeting face-to-face tonight? Okay, the recommendation has been made that we meet face-to-face quarterly, and so the exec committee will be talking about that, but if you have any comments or suggestions, we would clearly take those into consideration, but probably we'll move forward with the face-to-face meetings quarterly. Which would mean
we have that by consensus.
September, because it's a lot of our last meeting, so we can finish with a hurrah meal.
Yeah, hurrah meal. Yes,
with dessert.
The food was very good. Yes.
I thought the food was better than what I recall from before. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, it was very good.
Doing my job right.
Yay. Yes, you did a great job.
Thanks to Mallory for doing that.
Thanks, Mallory. I know this is hard.
You organized everything. Yes. You did a great job.
Thank you. Well, thanks for all your work in putting this together, too. It was a little more work than a virtual meeting. So.
Too bad it's not her dream job, though.
Really. Yeah. Well, she could design the room, you know, so that it's pleasant when we come in. Not that this isn't. But.
Will this be the location, or is it going to be TBD?
I think we're interested, and FAC is interested in having different locations in the community where we can have these meetings. Is that, do I have that correct?
Yeah.
I think we were trying to do the YWCA, but they weren't available for tonight, so.
So trying to encourage more public to come if they want and participate or at least hear what we do. And so by moving it around the community, that might help a little bit.
So if you have location ideas, feel free to send them my way.
All right, so our next meeting will be virtual, however, even though we enjoyed this evening tremendously. Our next meeting is July 25th, and it'll be virtual.
So September will probably be
In person.
September will be in person.
TBD.
Yes.
Location-wise.
Yes, yes.
And please take food. If you all would like to take some food, please do so.
There's a lot of food out there, so. All right. Good evening. Thank you for participating. It was lovely seeing everyone tonight.
Thank you.